We're up to Parshat Ki Tavo. And there's a lesson in Parshat Ki Tavo that we learn outside the parasha. In the parasha, we will learn about the mitzvot of bringing bikurim. We will learn about the mitzvot of vidui maaser, of erecting stones when we enter the land of Israel. There are many mitzvot we'll learn inside the parasha. But there are mitzvot that are outside the parasha. Our sages arranged the calendar and arranged the readings of the Torah in a specific way. And there were messages in the way they set up the reading of the Torah. We don't begin the year with Genesis, with Bereishis. We're going to begin the year with the end of the Torah, not the beginning of the Torah. And our sages wanted us to read Ki Tavo always 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. If you want to know when Rosh Hashanah is, you always know that you have Ki Tavo, one more parsha, and then Rosh Hashanah. Always. That's the way we set up our calendar. And the idea is that in Parshat Ki Tavo, we read about the curses, about what would happen if the Jewish people would not keep the Torah. So the Torah tells us what devastation can happen. And it's a very difficult parasha to read. Parshat Ki Tavo is probably the hardest parasha in the whole Torah. You read about people eating their own children. You read about people really suffering at the enemy's hands. Things that we unfortunately lived through under the Romans and under the Nazis, to the point where Hashem says, there are devastations that are not even written in this book that are going to come. And that's unfortunately been fulfilled, all these curses. So Chazal wanted us to read these curses 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. We shouldn't end the year with that. But on the other hand, we should end just before the end of the year with that. There's a message here. And the message, Chazal worded it as Tichle Shana v'kilotea. Let the year end and let all the curses that were in this year end with it. So we read these curses 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, so to speak. I did it already. And now I'm ready to start a new year. There's a custom on the eve of Yom Kippur that the Gabbai gives out candies. And every person goes over to him and says, can I please have a candy? And the Gabbai gives him a candy. What's the idea? If it was decreed on a person this year that they should have to ask people for something, it shouldn't be for big things. You shouldn't need a huge loan for who knows what medical treatment. If in heaven it's been decreed you should have to go asking for something, so you fulfilled it by asking the Gabbai for a candy. We look at the new year as a new beginning. In order for it to be a new beginning, we have to be open to our curses ending. Very often we're not. Very often we believe that whatever bad has happened is going to continue coming with us. And we stunt our own growth. We're not open to new beginnings. So Chazal told us, be open to a new beginning. All your curses can end. Next year can be a year of blessings. Read the curses 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, because you're leaving them behind. You have to be open to a new beginning. Rosh Hashanah, we blow shofar. What's shofar? Shofar is what we blow on Yom Kippur of Yovel. Shofar is about freedom. I've left my problems behind. I'm a servant of God, and I'm going to have a new, good, wonderful year. I declare Hashem is King. I look forward to positive things. We walk into Rosh Hashanah, we take a haircut, we take a shower, we shave, we cut our nails, we walk into Rosh Hashanah fresh, clean, clean clothing, where we ourselves are clean. What are you doing walking in that way? Maybe they're going to tell you such horrible things about the year that's coming up. Maybe they're going to say you lose your job, and who knows what health challenges, and who knows what's waiting for you this year. What are you walking in with such confidence? Wait until you hear what they have to say, then you walk in that way. No, we say not that way. I have confidence. I know Hashem wants me to have a good year. I know I have a relationship with Him. I might not have lived up to everything I wanted to, but I'm walking into Rosh Hashanah with this confidence in our relationship. Things are going to work out okay. I have to be open to blessing. There are people who are only open to bad things happening to them. I can't wait to see what's going to go wrong today. That's not the way you should open up your eyes. We read this parsha this week so that we can have closure. We can have it behind us. There have been difficult things this year. They're going to end. Let's be open to new beginnings. Otherwise, we recreate our troubles. We recreate our problems. No, we have to be open to closing our problems. Leave them behind. We don't have to take that baggage with us. Very often we cannot leave our baggage behind. We have to be able to leave our baggage behind. You ever meet those people who keep telling you about that terrible thing that happened in their life? But you don't understand how bad it was. Let me tell you. They're still reliving their problems. Yes, there are tragedies in life. Move forward. I had a lady who held something against me for years. Over half a decade. She would come back, and any time I met her and her husband, she'd say, "You said it wasn't a tragedy." She had a miscarriage. So she asked for a meeting. She showed up with her husband, and she said, "Rabbi, how are we supposed to deal with this tragedy?" Now, when couples have miscarriages, I always tell the husband, to your wife, there was a baby that she lost. She takes it seriously. To you, as difficult as it is, a day later, a week later, a month later, you move on. To her, it's traumatic. It's hard. And you have to give her that recognition and work with her. But the lady didn't say it's hard and terrible. The lady sat there after having, Baruch Hashem, quite a few healthy children. She sat there and said, "How do we deal with this tragedy?" So as we're talking, I said, "Lady, you'll forgive me, but I'm going to tell you something very harsh. This isn't a tragedy. You shouldn't know from tragedies. This is tough. This is hard. This is something you're going to have to work through. But don't use the word tragedy. This is not a tragedy. People who lose children, that's a tragedy. People who have many different terrible things that happen in their life, that's a tragedy. This is tough. This isn't a tragedy." Boy, was she upset at me. Anytime this couple would come to meet again, somewhere in the conversation she'd say, "And I know the rabbi's going to say this isn't a tragedy." She'd stick in that line for years. And I don't take back what I've said. It was important for me to say it. As upset as it got her, it was important to give her perspective. It's not a tragedy. I'm sorry. It's difficult. It's hard. It's painful. I'm not taking that away from her. It's not a tragedy. It's devastating, it's saddening, it's hard. You have to overcome it and move on. Don't call it a tragedy. Because then, oh, I've been through a tragedy. No, you haven't. You've been through something hard that most women in this world go through. One in four pregnancies end in a miscarriage. You can't call it a tragedy. It's one of the very difficult things that people sometimes have to undergo in life. Yes, but it's not a tragedy. So we read Ki Tavo, we remind ourselves, we have to move forward. We have to be open to new beginnings. We have to be open to a new year. The greatness, one of the greatest gifts that we have with Rosh Hashanah is that we're not continuing. We're stopping and saying, last year ended. There's this end point. This is a new year. That means I'm starting a new chapter in my life. I have to decide what I write in it. Very often when I sit down to learn, I take a blank piece of paper in front of me. Some of you will notice that when we sit down for meetings, I take out a blank piece of paper in front of me. Because when I see a blank piece of paper, I'm open to a conversation. I'm open to thinking. I'm open to thinking fresh. All the scratch marks and mistakes of the past are on the other pad. New pad, new piece of paper, new beginning. Let's start. What do we have to discuss? We have to be open to starting a new chapter on Rosh Hashanah. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants to give us blessings. Are we open to making those blessings into reality? People say, "I want to have many things next year." Am I open to really having those blessings? Or am I taking along whatever weaknesses I had, and so it's impossible for me to get those blessings? Think about it, guys. Most people walk into Rosh Hashanah and they're not open to new blessings. They are not fulfilling what this parasha says. They come and do all the traditional things on Rosh Hashanah, and they expect a new outcome when they're not ready to put in a new input. They're going to continue the same things they did last year and expect different results. No. They have to stop. There are the problems of last year, and now I'm starting a new year. There's opportunity here. How do you behave when you come to a new shul? I don't know how you behave, but I feel like it's an opportunity. No one knows me. They could still think I'm a tzaddik. It's an opportunity to behave well. They don't know anything about me. No one knows my history. No one knows when I've done wrong. No one knows the times I've shown up late to shul, or who knows what other nonsense I've done. No good. I can still make a good impression. A new student showed up. I could try to behave myself. Maybe he'll think nice things about me. There new opportunity. You already do. Good. A good answer. Okay. We have opportunities. And we have to look at that. Parshat Ki Tavos says, end the curses. You want a new beginning, end the curses. And I want to tell you a fantastic story my dentist told me last week. Give me 1 second, my hand got all sticky, I'm just washing it off. 1 second.
You have beautiful teeth, that's what he said.
So I have a wonderful dentist, and I don't remember how the topic came up, but I guess he asked me for a Dvar Torah. I told him something about the parsha that was connected to this, and he told me the following story. He said that they had a meeting with the head warlock of Africa. It seems that many people in Africa believe in magic, and they have a president of all the magicians. So they had an interview with him. He's supposed to be the top magician, the top warlock, the top black magic doctor, right? Voodoo. And he said, this stuff is important. He said, you know, every person that comes to a doctor, every doctor will tell you that there's a very substantial percentage that are going to get better. If they're positive, if they're willing to believe they're going to get better. So we help them believe they're going to get better. He said, there's a science to what we do. It makes them believe they're going to get better, and that helps them get better. So it doesn't always work, but often it works. And then he told me the next story. He said there was an army doctor down in South Africa who had a patient wheeled in. Not wheeled in, I'm sorry. The soldiers came in, and they were all holding down one soldier who was wild and thrashing all over, saying he's going to kill everyone, beat everyone up. And the doctor asks, what happened? So they said, there's a witch doctor that cursed him, gave him a serious curse, and ever since then he's gone wild. You can't stop him. So they tipped in this British doctor what he's supposed to do. So the doctor said, okay, I have to see how bad the curse is. And he took out some blood from the patient. All these soldiers are holding him down. And the doctor takes out blood. And then he takes out a cylinder from his closet. He pours in a white liquid. And then he says, we're going to have to first see how tough the curse this other witch doctor put on you. And then he takes the blood he took out of this soldier and he pours it into the cylinder, into that clear liquid, and smoke starts coming out. It's bubbling all over. Well, it was hydrogen peroxide. Blood and hydrogen peroxide bubbles and smokes. And he goes, oh boy, oh boy, this is a very serious curse they put on you. And then he goes to the fridge and he takes out two syringes full of vitamin B. that's very, very ice cold. And he tells the soldiers, bend them over. And then he gives them two shots, like full syringes of vitamin B in his rear end, of ice cold vitamin B. And he says, now, sir, this is the cure. And I believe that as painful as it is, this will overcome your curse. Now, ice cold vitamin B in these quantities shot up a person the way it was there. He couldn't sit down for a week. Very painful. He was in such pain, he couldn't sit for a week. A month later, they bring the guy back. He takes out blood. He takes a clear liquid from his closet, puts it in the cylinder, pours the blood into the liquid, no smoke. Well, this time he put it in water. Blood and water doesn't emit any smoke. So he looks at the patient and he says, sir, you're cured. What can I tell you? It worked. I hope you feel much better. The guy says, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. He says, yeah, it was a very serious curse. It was a very serious curse, but it worked. You are now cured. You can walk home and not worry about the curse. And then the guy became a normal soldier all over again. Perfect. Everything's fine. Story number two. My Yemenite neighbor told me a story that happened in his family in Yemen. An old Arab woman comes to his uncle and says, sir, doctor, my cow is sick and she's on the verge of dying. So he asks her a bunch of questions and he says, okay, lady, I'm going to send my son tomorrow morning and your cow will be cured. So the next morning he tells his son, go over to her house and bring with you a piece of parchment. Ask her the name of the cow, write it down in ink. Here's the ink. Here's the feather. Ask her the cow's mother's name, the cow's father's name, the cow's sister's name, the cow's aunt's name. Go through all the names of the family members, write them down on the parchment. Then tell her you need 3 buckets full of water and another bucket full of oats. And then start scratching the names into the buckets. And tell her, now the cow must finish these buckets of water and oats and she'll be cured. So the kid does like his father told him. He goes to the Arab lady's house. He tells her, I need 3 buckets of water. I need 1 bucket of oats. He sits down. He takes out the parchment. He asks her for the names. He starts writing down the cow's name, her mother's name, her grandmother's name, her aunt's name, her great aunt's name. He's writing down all the names. And then he erases the ink into the 3 buckets, and then he says, now let the cow drink and drink and drink. She has to finish these 3 buckets and the oats, and my father says she'll be cured. A week later, the Arab lady shows up with a ton of money. She says, you're a genius, you cured my cow, you are the saint, and she's blessing him. So the kid looks at his father, and the father smiles, and he wishes the Arab lady a good day, and he says, son, you're in the business. So the kid goes, dad, what'd you do? You know, and I know, that the names did nothing. What was that all about? She says, you're right. The way she described the cow was dehydrated. But if I would start arguing with her, you have to give the cow more to drink, she wouldn't agree with me. She'd say, no, I give her plenty. I saw, I was talking to her. I said, does the cow drink enough? Yes. In all her descriptions, the cow was dehydrated. So the only way to cure the cow was to rehydrate her. How do I get her to feed her cow 3 buckets of water? I tell her this whole story. Now the cow has to drink those 3 buckets. It's not a question of dehydration, sure. Now she agreed. She fed the cow, and you saw, once the cow drank the way she should, she was all cured. Okay. These stories sound funny, but they're real.
No, it's real.
They're real.
Yeah, I know those stories.
We walk into Rosh Hashanah. Are we ready to leave things behind, or are we taking them with us? We need to remind ourselves it's a new beginning. So some people only realize that, hey, the past is the past and I'm starting now, when they get 2 shots of cold vitamin B and they can't sit on their seat for 2 weeks, and then they suddenly realize, ooh, it's done, I'm cured. Some people need to be told, scratch in the names of your mother and grandmother and aunt and drink the water and then you'll start a new year. We don't do any of that. We live the reading of the parasha. And when we read the parasha this week, we remind ourselves these are the curses the Torah warned about. And if any of them, unfortunately, we've seen them in our lives, our sages say, leave them behind. And we have to be able to do that. People relive the curses of their lives, their whole lives. People have fears they take with them. People have regrets they take with them. People believe that they are not worthy of a blessed year. People walk into the Rosh Hashanah convinced that next year is going to be the same as this year. If people didn't merit to have children, they're sure they won't have children either. There's the story of two Hasidim who would faithfully go to the Rebbe every year and ask for a blessing to have children. And every year the Rebbe would bless them, they'd come back home, and the next year they'd be back at the Rebbe asking for a blessing for children again. So years go by and they don't have kids. Now on their way to the Rebbe, they'd stay at an inn. And the innkeeper also didn't have kids. So one year he asks them, he says, why do you go to the Rebbe every year? So they said, oh, we go to the Rebbe to get a blessing to have kids. So he says, really? He goes to his wife and he says, you know, they go to the Holy Rabbi to get a blessing to have kids. Maybe I should go with them this year. So his wife says, sure, go. I didn't know the Rabbi blesses such things. Go. So he packs his bag. He says, gentlemen, I'm with you this year. Give me just a few minutes. I'm packing my bags. He goes with them to the Rebbe. Okay, they come to the Rebbe. The Rebbe gives him a blessing. He should have kids. He gives them blessings. They should have kids. They come back to his inn. He wishes them good luck. They wish him good luck. Okay, a year passes. They come back to his inn. And there's a crib. And there's a baby. And he said, gentlemen, I don't know how to thank you. You took me to the Rebbe. Look, his blessing came true. The two of them four smiles onto their faces. And they continue their journey to the Rebbe with heavy hearts. They walk into the Rebbe and they say, Rebbe, we don't understand. We've been coming all these years. And we don't have kids. And he came once. And now a year later, he has a baby. Rebbe. So the Rebbe looks at them and says, when you guys left, you would tell one another, see you next year. When he left, he came home and he told his wife, we have to buy a crib, we have to buy a baby basket, we have to buy diapers, because the Rebbe blessed us, we're going to have a kid this year. So, are we walking into Rosh Hashanah saying, see you next year? I know we're going to talk about things I want to change this year, but next year I'm going to talk about them again. Because I know the life I've led, so it's going to be the same next year. No. We have to be open to coming to a new year. If last year and the year before were not the fulfillment of the potential I wanted them to be, comes Parshat Ki Tavo and says, end. Read it, leave it, and move forward. And we've always had a hard time leaving things behind. The Jewish people had a hard time keeping Shemitah. The Jewish people had a hard time keeping Yovel. We have a hard time leaving things behind and moving forward to a new beginning. We're accustomed to the problems we're used to. No, let's make a new beginning. Part of it is, let's leave it behind. The pressures, the disappointments, the problems of last year, we have to be able to create closure. So Chazal gave us this parsha. The point of this parsha is that 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, we start closing up shop. My problems are done. They're finished. I'm leaving them here. I'm going to be open to new beginnings, to wonderful blessings in my life. I'm going to be open to a new year. Let the year end and its curses end. Let the year begin with its blessings. Much of our blessings are a question of, are we open to them? Are we willing to answer the phone when it rings? Am I open to the opportunity that knocks at my door? That's a central question. I've accompanied so many couples, young men and young women, in the dating process who met their spouse and then said, I can't do this, and turned around and walked away. But it's the right person for you, and you know it's the right person for you. Yeah, but that's scary. I'm not open to that blessing in my life. When we approach Rosh Hashanah, we are trying to create a person who is open to blessing, open to change, who's going to leave his problems behind him so that he can create blessings. Again, most people don't do this. Let's take Parshat Ki Tavoh and the message Chazal had with Parshat Ki Tavoh and start thinking about how I leave my problems with last year. I'm open to a new beginning. Let's begin our parsha quickly. Our parsha begins with the mitzvah of Bikurim. When we are in the land of Israel, so the Torah says, as the fruit grow, we have the seven species. The seven species, among them are trees. What trees? Tell me, seven species, what trees are among the seven species? What fruits? No?
Wheat.
Fruit, trees. Figs, yes. Pomegranates, yes.
Dates.
Grapes, thank you. Eretz Chita, Sorag, Gefen, Teinat, Rimon, Zeit, thank you. Olives, Tavash, and you said dates, okay. Okay, so you walk out into your field and you see a pomegranate that's ripe, that's luscious, the first pomegranate. You wrap a red string around it and you say, this is Bikurim. How much? There's no limit. You could take the first 5, you could take the first 50. Eilu dvim shein lem shiur, we say every morning in the Mishnah. The following things, the more you do, the better, but there's no defined quantity. So we take the first fruits, we put them in a basket, we take it in a respectable way up to the temple. Sometimes people come with the most important documents they have in their life and they're carrying them all flimsy like that. You got a gear diploma, what'd you do with it? Frame it, hang it on the wall. Okay, you don't want everyone to see it. Put it in a nice envelope, scan it, email it to a few people you trust so you have a backup of it. Things that are important in your life, you house in an important way. Don't leave it somewhere where it'll get all destroyed. There are things that are important in your life. Torah says you take those first fruits, you bring them to their bon shom, put them in a nice basket. Very often people bring gifts to their wives. They don't gift wrap them. Excuse me. Torah said bring things in a respectable way. The basket is important. Don't just hand it to them. Put it in a nice basket. You're bringing up your first fruits to the temple. So you come up to the temple, you come to the Kohen. You might tell yourself, I remember his grandfather, he had a long white beard, he was such a pious man. Now I'm coming to this youngster, what does he know? Torah says, don't look at life that way. You're coming out of appreciation, you're coming to say, thank you Hashem, you brought me this far. So look nicely upon the Kohen who's there and tell him, I'm making a declaration, God, thank you for bringing me today to this land. What do you mean today? You've been here for 300 years. You're the great-great-great-great-grandson of someone who made Aliyah. What do you mean today?
3 years
in New Year. Our sages say, the Torah was warning us. When you make Aliyah, you begin by being excited. And then as time passes, you start saying, why don't the buses have air conditioning? Why do people push? Why is it so crowdy? Why don't people know about deodorant? Why isn't the air conditioning working? Why are the apartments small? Why is the bureaucracy stifling? You have a lot of things to complain about. Chazal say that is the nature of coming to the land of Israel. We enjoy it, we love it, we admire it, we're proud of it, we're excited over it, until some time passes. And then we get tired of it, and we look down upon it. And so the Torah says every year when you make that ascent to the temple, you remind yourself, you make believe, I made Aliyah today. I remember the first years I lived in Israel, I would look out the window and pinch myself and say, can you believe it? You're here. It's like a little boy. I turn on the radio just to hear them talking Hebrew. Turn it on, hear them talking Hebrew, turn it off. Then I try to go to sleep at night and I'd say, wait, I got to do that one more time. I turn it on, hear the Hebrew coming out of the radio and look at myself and say, can you believe you're living in a time when there's a radio? I would buy Coca-Cola with Hebrew letters on it, not because I wanted to drink Coca-Cola, but because I couldn't believe that our little country has Coca-Cola in Hebrew. Kuf, Vav, Kuf, Hey. I just look at it and marvel. Coca in Hebrew. Can you believe it? Look at how far we've gotten. Now I'm here 2 decades. And I try to remind myself to be so excited over the Coca-Cola. And it's like, okay, whatever. No, not whatever. Comes the Torah and says, take time and say, I thank you, Hashem, because I came today. The Rambam used to celebrate the day he made Aliyah. It was a family celebration. Many families in Israel celebrate the day they made Aliyah every year. The whole family gets together, they have a reunion, they celebrate it. Torah says, celebrate it. Stop and make believe you came today. You've been here a few generations, all the more so it's important to celebrate it. So in the celebration of the fruit, we say, I thank Hashem as though I've come today. Thank you, Hashem, for this land you've given me. We give the Kohen the basket, he places it before the Mizbeach, and then we make a declaration. We start reviewing Jewish history. We say, you know, our history has been so tough. We've always been persecuted. From the very beginning, Yaakov's father-in-law, Laban the Aramean, wanted to destroy him. Then we were forced down into Egypt. And over there, we were scarce in numbers. Then we grew. So the Egyptians tried destroying us. We called out to Hashem, and Hashem saw our oppression, took us out of Egypt, and brought us here with such miracles. He gave us this land flowing with milk and honey. Here, I've brought the first fruits that you, Hashem, gave me. It's a recognition. It's not mine. When we stop working on Shabbos, what we're saying is, God's the boss. The Jewish people make a declaration every week. I am not the boss. I have a boss. Right? Bikurim is the declaration once a year. This is not my property. This is Hashem's gift to me. Here's the fruit that you gave me, Hashem. And then the Torah says a very important mitzvah. This mitzvah might sound obvious to you. I think most people don't know how to fulfill this mitzvah. The Torah says, be happy. V'samachta v'chol hatov. Be happy with all the good that Hashem has given you. Don't just be focused on getting ahead. Things are good now. Stop and enjoy. Be happy. You brought Bikurim, and this is a central theme to the mitzvah. A central theme is, when you come up to the temple, you say thank you to Hashem, so I have to say thank you, and then you stop and rejoice and be happy. Torah gives you a mitzvah to be happy. Be happy with the blessings of your life. Give to the Levite, give to the Ger, make other people happy with you. That's the Torah's form of happiness. But be happy. You know, there are people that when they get married, they have a table for poor people. If you've invited 200 of your own weddings, what about taking a tenth of that, 20 people, who can't afford a good supper, and giving them a good supper from your wedding food? So some people need the wedding to go to. I invited a family to our wedding. I invited family that had, they were a family in Mea Sharm. They had maybe, I don't know how many kids, many, many, many children. And one of the daughters has spina bifida, had her spine coming out, her spine wasn't formed well. So the spinal cord came out.
It was broken.
Right, her spine was broken from birth with her spinal cord coming out. So we invited that family with their daughter to come and celebrate at the wedding. We didn't know them. They were a family that we had merited giving tzedakah to over the years. And I said, if the girl will want, she'll come and dance in the circle with my wife. How many weddings does she go to? How many times does the family get a good dinner? So there are people that when they make a family event, they make sure to take a certain amount of the portions to give poor families respectable, good portions. Sometimes there are families that want to be invited. It's a night out for the couple. They can go out on a date. They could go and get a good meal with their family. Some people prefer you. They could just have the food delivered to them. But that's the idea of Bikurim. I'm coming to celebrate, to thank Hashem for all my good food. Torah says, yeah, and you're going to give the Levite and the Ger. Person walks into Yom Tiv. How could you walk into Yom Tiv and sit at your table and eat your delicious meal if you don't know that there's another family that you took care of that they should have a delicious meal? The Torah's mitzvah of being happy on Yom Tiv is make other people happy. So if you have the type of home where you can invite the widow and the orphan to eat at your table, good. And if you can't, then at least you should fund that they should have it. That's a mitzvah tzedakah every Yom Tiv. Wherever the Torah says, be happy on Yom Tiv, how are you supposed to be happy on Yom Tiv? When you've made other people happy, then you could be happy. It's not just, oh, I could sit and enjoy my good meal and my time off. No, it's I've taken care of the people who I can as well, not only myself. Wherever the Torah gives us the mitzvah to be happy, the Torah puts it together with making others happy. That's the Torah's form of happiness. So on the one hand, the Torah says, V'samachta v'chol atov, you should be happy with all the blessings in your life. We have to take time to thank Hashem and be happy with it. On the other hand, the Torah says, make others happy with you. We're up to Sheni. The Torah says that on the fourth year of the Shemitah cycle, we have to finish paying our dues. We know we're supposed to give a tithe, we're supposed to give truma to the kohen. So the Torah says, when you hit the Pesach of the fourth year, make a declaration, I paid my dues. I have a friend who pointed out to me in this week's parsha an interesting concept the Torah is teaching us. You ever see people who put on their tefillin and they're all nervous as the tefillin in the middle? Like they're working with a mirror and they try to get it just right. Who said you're supposed to do that? Torah says put it in the middle. You put it in the middle as best as you can and move on with life. But let me go look in the mirror. Who said you should look in the mirror? It doesn't say you have to get a mirror. Put on tefillin as best as you can in the middle and move on. They didn't used to have mirrors so easily all around. People didn't own mirrors. The mitzvah tefillin isn't about looking in a mirror. The mitzvah tefillin is aim, put it on, do it as well as you can, move on. You got it better, you got it worse, you do what you can. Yeah, you want to take a peek in a mirror, take a peek in a mirror, but that's not really the idea. So the Torah's system of keeping mitzvos is not about being so uptight. The Torah says you make a declaration when you finish giving your dues. You say, I've done everything you commanded me, Hashem. How many people would feel comfortable saying that today? People would say, well, I don't know. Did I get it just right? Maybe I should have done this. Take it easy. Torah wants you to be comfortable. In the Kuzari, he discusses the Karaites. The Karaites was a sect that developed, actually, long after the destruction of the Second Temple. There was a man who tried to develop a movement among the Muslim nations, and the Muslims realized he was a troublemaker, so they put him in jail and they were ready to kill him. And then he saw he was about to get killed, so he made up the following lie. He said, all I'm trying to do is interpret the Torah based on the text. And the rabbis, they invented the Torah, but I'm trying to be true to the text. And by saying that, he got out of the Muslim prison, and then he developed the Karaite movement. And there were precedents to the Karaite movement that were similar to it. If it was the Samaritans, if it was the Kutim, if it was the Sadducees, if it was the Baitusees, there were different sects, but they were all almost extinct. When he came along and started a whole new movement, this goes back a few centuries before the Rambam, in the Gaonic time period, and he developed this sect called the Karaites. So the Jews had to contend with the Karaites for a few centuries. Today there are still some Karaites, but they're almost all gone. They have a shul in the old city. There are a few, but not that many left. So the Karaites, they would each interpret the Torah the way they thought was right. And in the Kuzari, in the second section, one of the things the Kuzari writes is that when we have tradition, we know how to interpret Torah, so then at the end of the day, we can be comfortable. I did what it says. Supposed to read Shema in the morning. I read it. Supposed to put on film. I put them on. I did my mitzvos. The Karaites are always questioning themselves. Maybe I should interpret it this way. Maybe I should interpret it that way. They have no tradition. So it's open game. Says the Kuzari, one of the gifts the Torah gives us is peace of mind. Man is not supposed to approach the Torah and keep questioning, maybe I should have done better. Man is supposed to approach the Torah and say, this was my mitzvah, I did it, I'm great. You heard that? Walk away feeling good, you did what was right. It's a gift the Torah gives us, that we don't have to be uptight. We can be happy with what we've done. The declaration of the Maestro is the person says, I did everything you commanded me, Hashem. We have to be able to say that. We're up to Shlishi. Gentlemen, are we together? Good. Hashem says, you've chosen me, I've chosen you. We're in this together. Et Hashem emarta ayom. Hashem says, I want you to know that just as you've chosen Hashem and singled him out, you're not worshiping any other being, so too Hashem has chosen you and singled you out. You are his chosen nation. So this is an important concept. Here the Torah says, you've been singled out. There's not going to be another chosen nation. You are the chosen nation. Moshe tells them, when you enter the land of Israel, erect rocks. I have a question. You don't have to answer the question, but I wonder if you were wondering this question. We're not supposed to teach Torah to non-Jewish people. So how come people who have entered the GEAR program can learn Torah here? They're not yet Jewish. So the Chasam Sofer writes in his responsa, when the Torah gave us a mitzvah in this week's parsha, that when we enter the land of Israel, we would write down the Torah and translate it into 70 languages. And it's not clear whether it means the whole Torah literally was translated into 70 languages, or they wrote a summary of what the Torah says, and they translated that into 70 languages, because technically they did it in one day. How could you do that in one day? And they did it on 12 stones. How could you do it on a stone? How big could the stone already be? So that's why some say it was a short version. But at any rate, the nations came and copied it down. It says the nations heard that the Jews had translated the Torah into all the languages, and they came and copied it. So the Chasam Sofer says, when the Torah gave us that mitzvah, the Torah was saying, with regards to the written Torah, it's free game. Non-Jews are allowed to learn the written Torah. What about the oral Torah? So there we rely on a different leniency. That we're teaching a whole class. If we had a class that was only people who are not yet Jewish, then we really would have a problem teaching them the oral Torah. The reason we teach it is we're teaching everyone. So then if people are here who have not yet finished year, people who have, we don't discern. But on the written Torah, you could teach it. The written Torah, anyone can learn. The oral Torah, it's a little bit, really we would prefer that a person finishes gear and then come learn it. Now, there's no prohibition for a person who hasn't done his gear to learn it. Meaning he can access whatever he wants. The question is, can you teach him individually the oral Torah? So there, to teach him individually is a problem. Now, some of it you have to teach him. A person, how can he undergo gear? He doesn't know what he's supposed to do. You have to teach parts of it. But to sit and teach a person how to learn Talmud, that's really for after Giyur. If we could, we would expedite the Giyur process and then let people learn it afterwards. But we don't have so much control. Rav Goldenberg, sure. Right? So I rely on the leniency that Rav Feinstein said. That so long as you're teaching a classroom setting, so then everyone, anyone who wants, can listen in and ask questions. Yeah, that's... But really, it's again, there are two sides to the coin. The idea really is that a person comes to convert. We take 1 week, we teach them the basics of what Judaism is all about. And then we say, you want to do it? Do it. Undergo a circumcision. Think about it. Do whatever research you want. But the gear process written in halacha is a process that takes 2 days, 3 days. Today that it's become so tempting for people to join the Jewish people because there are so many perks. So the Rabbanut has said we want a long process. People should have a longer time to analyze it to see if they really want to do it. But that's not the original system. Until this century, never was this way. A person wanted to convert, they could undergo a week course and then decide if they want to do it. But remember that until this century, anyone who converted was risking their lives and losing the right to own land, losing many, many rights by converting. So there was never a temptation like today to convert. So an angel, up until this century, up until the declaration of the state, a gear program went much more quickly. You want to convert? You got to be legit because you're hurting yourself. Meaning today there are perks. So it's so the process has become longer. Yes?
Do you think that Hashem would actually punish somebody
why not? The idea is like this. Hashem knew that nations would translate the written Torah and claim that they're the chosen people. So Hashem said, the way to preclude it is that anyone who tries to understand the written Torah without the oral Torah will end up with a warped way of life. I will make the written Torah such that there's no way to really understand the Torah without the oral tradition. And the oral Torah will be so hard to learn that you'll need to learn it from someone who has a tradition. We haven't yet heard of anyone in North Korea, in South Korea, or in anywhere else being a scholar of Talmud through studying Art Scroll. Why not? But Art Scroll spells it out before you because you can't really understand and grow. Why not? Sure, have a seat. You can't really grow, and the Talmud is purposely written in a way that you can't really wrap your head around it without being taught by someone who has a tradition. It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. Leave it. So the idea, says the Medrash Amsikta Rav Kahana, the idea is so that no one can copy the Jewish way of life. And so there was this concept of retaining the understanding of Torah for those people who are Jewish. Being that we know the nations try to copy it. So the Christians made their Shabbos on Sunday, and the Muslims made their Shabbos on Friday. But everyone's trying to copy it. So the Christians will fast on the eve of a certain holiday, and the Muslims will fast on a whole month. They're copying. They're trying. But they're not getting it, right? It's off. It's not. There's a balance to the way of the Torah. And when you try to copy, but you know, on the paste, you have options. Match destination setting, keep original settings, right? So format. So they're not going to keep original format. They're going to adapt it to their style. Okay, so then it ends up being off. It's not the Torah's balance. But that was part of the idea of keeping the oral Torah secret. That you want to learn it, become Jewish. You want to attend a yeshiva, learn it. So the Torah didn't want us to make the oral Torah available because the balance of the Torah, the way of life that the Torah is really giving us, can only be accessed through the oral Torah. If you don't have that, then you're going to end up with putting film between your eyes right here. If you don't have that, you're going to end up with, the Torah says on Shabbos, don't leave your place. You'll sit in one place all of Shabbos. If you don't have that, you'll hang tzitzis around your house because it says you should see them everywhere. So hang tzitzis all over. And you can interpret Torah. If you don't have that, then an eye for an eye becomes literal. The Muslims take it literally. Right? It says if there's a fight and a woman grabs a man by her private parts, cut off her hand. So our tradition is that you do not cut off her hand. You charge her, you fine her for embarrassing him, for hurting him, etc. But that's tradition. The verse says cut off her hand. So there are those who will, those who don't have tradition. Our tradition is that you don't put a person, you don't stand them up, put sticks around them and burn them at the spoke. But you know the pilgrims did. Saying if you look at world history, there have been many who tried to mimic the Torah. And their lifestyle didn't last. The Torah lifestyle lasts because there's a balance, and that balance can only be attained through the oral Torah. And the oral Torah, Hashem says, that's a covenant between me and you. Keep it that way. Don't go publicizing it. The Torah describes how we'll stand on two mountains, and the Levites in the middle, and then the Jewish people will accept curses, that if anyone transgresses certain mitzvot in private, we accept that they should be cursed. Now, there are 11 of them, and some of them are important we should remember. You should remember all of Torah, but some of them apply to us literally every day. Torah says, cursed is one who degrades their parent. So wait, I know I have to honor them, I know I have to service them, and respect them. What does it mean not to degrade them? That means your dad said, in 1964, the Mets won the World Series. And you're sitting there and you compute and you say, no, they didn't. So all you do is go, wait, what did you just do? You made a move that put down your father. Wait, what's the big deal? All I did was laugh, snort, make some kind of move that just said, like, what does he know? Okay, who knows that I made that move? Torah says, no, Arur Makle, it's a new mitzvah. Cursed is he who degrades, who does something degradatory towards their parent. And even if the parent doesn't know it, it's teaching us a new level of respect to our parent. Arur Masikvu Reyehu, we have to be so careful, there's a boundary between me and my neighbor, I shouldn't shift that boundary. I shouldn't go beyond that boundary. This is something that people somehow think is fair so long as you do it against the government. If you're stealing government land, that's okay. Who said it's okay? It's okay. It's from the government. So you're stealing everyone instead of just someone. Now, Chazal say this also applies to unfair competition. There are laws of competition. And if we do competition that is unfair towards our competition, so that's also called I've crossed the boundaries between me and my neighbor. Meaning there are laws. There are laws. People misapply this, but there are laws. The Torah says, cursed is he who doesn't uphold this whole Torah. So here we learn you have to uphold the whole Torah. But this is also a source for the mitzvah of Hagbah. You have to uphold the whole Torah. So a person has to accept, I'm going to perform the Torah as I learn it, I'm going to perform it. And this is a support for the mitzvah of doing Hagbah, which is a very big mitzvah. And then the Torah goes into the promise of the blessings, how well we'll have it if we adhere to the Torah, and the warnings of what would happen if, God forbid, we transgress the Torah. And being that it's the beginning of a new semester, I've chosen to focus on other things. I'll leave this for now. If you're really curious, take an art scroll, read the translation. Our time is up, and you guys have just notified me that this Thursday we're all at a wedding. So if you're really curious, I have classes online on the Parsha, but you can also learn it in art scroll. For us, what we needed to know, we've touched on.